Good morning. Another edition of the Hiring Confessional. I'm Michael Hayes from Momentum Hiring Solutions. You know how I like to start off stuff with something light and fun, but today, I don't know if any of you noticed, but the University of Michigan came out this morning and said that what they're going to do now is they're not going to give grades for the first semester because they don't want to stress out those college students. And I'm listening to that, saying to myself, there's a guy laying in some no man's land in Ukraine getting his legs blown off at 18, and you're worried about somebody having a little stress attack at the University of Michigan. By the way, people, if you're sending your kids to schools like that, take the $100,000, go buy a boat or whatever it is, and enjoy yourself, because you're not doing anybody any favors. And if you're wondering why it's hard to hire people, if you're wondering why people switch jobs every 5 minutes, it starts with things like that. By the way, if you can't hire people, you can hire me to come in and look at your system, and I'll tell you what you're doing wrong. And if you like, I'll just take the whole thing over for a nice nominal fee. Again, it's Mike Hayes. Reach out to us at Momentum Hiring Solutions. Be happy to talk to you. Today, I have a really good guest who I've known from the radio when he did sports in town and was really good when we actually did sports on the radio here in Phoenix. And I also knew him from the Cardinals games because misery loves company. His name is Mark Asher from Southwest Wealth Strategies. Mark, great to see you again.
What's up, Coach?
Yeah.
How you doing? Hey, by the way, my first year of college, according to my parents, they didn't give out grades either.
Yeah.
Because I didn't show them.
Well, they disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, Dad. They didn't do them this year.
You went to NAU, too.
That's right. The Harvard of the West.
Which is the only accredited university in Arizona, as we know.
Absolutely. 100%.
So let's get right into it. Give us a little bit about how you got started in broadcasting, and then tell us the unusual story that happened to you to get you to switch gears.
Okay, so let's go way back, college days, NAU, as I mentioned. I was just always, you know, I was a sports guy. You know, all the way back to high school. So when my senior year of high school, they asked me to do the third period announcements, right? Hey, today in the, you know, whatever.
Right.
And a bunch of teachers kept coming up to me and advisors and whatnot saying, you know, you have a really nice voice. Have you ever thought about broadcasting? And I was like, no, but okay. And so I get to NAU. I was like, all right, I'll try it. Like, I didn't have this goal to be some sports broadcaster, right? I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Actually, I wanted to be a sports agent, and then I realized you had to do law school. I was like, okay, broadcasting sounds good.
Yeah, let's get that.
Right, and so I started in you know, it was called KRCK. It came in on channel 2 on the TV in your dorm room, right? It wasn't actually a radio station.
It was only out to the side of the building.
Yeah, you could stand outside, maybe hear it, and then on your TV. So I did, you know, it was like an alternative station. So I would do stuff there, and then I was in charge of all the DJs and just kind of building it. And I think my first or probably my second year of college, I met a guy named it was actually a guy that who I had listened to a little bit, right? And I was really excited about getting in, and he brought me in, and he kind of showed me the way. His name was Jeff Kennedy, and he was doing a sports show on a local station, KVNA AM 600. And so he kind of brought me in. I was doing some DJ work on the FM side of things, which I didn't really love being a DJ, but whatever. It made a couple bucks, and it was fun. And so he kind of brought me in, would start bringing me, you know, on the show, and kind of realized I knew a lot about sports. And then I realized, wow, I really do. Like, I have a memory, and I can talk about games from the past. Long story short, he gets fired, and then he offered me the job. So I'm like 20 years old. I'm hosting my own radio show on a local AM station. And I did that for a couple years. And then, you know, your first taste of getting fired mm-hmm. was there. And so I got fired. I don't really remember why, but the whole show went away. And so I graduated, and I was trying to do some TV work up there at Channel 2, which was like an NBC affiliate. And then I was like, you know, I don't want to live in Flagstaff. So I came down the hill, and I interviewed with, at the time, was sports, what was it, 1360?
Yeah.
Or 1380, whatever it was. Anyway, KGME, right? And so I come down, and I interview with a guy named Tim Liotta. You probably remember mm-hmm. that name, right?
Yeah.
And so I sit there, and I'm interviewing with him, and he's going through all my stuff, and he's seen all the stuff I've done. I did play-by-play in Flagstaff. I did the high school football games, baseball, basketball, right, of, like, Coconino and Flag High, Sanawa, which was still around then. And so at the end of the interview, he says, all right, well, cool. Well, I don't think I'm going to hire you. And I was like, oh, I thought this was going pretty well, right? And he goes, you're overqualified for the job that I have. And I said, I sat there for a second. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Hire me, get my foot in the door, and I'll make the rest happen. And he goes, that's kind of cocky. And I go, you just told me I'm overqualified for the job. So, Mike, my first job was midnight to 8 a.m., running the board, not on air, pressing a commercial once, and like a, you know, a set of commercials at the top of the hour, and the legal ID. That's it. I'm in this building all by myself, midnight to 8. I used to, this is not good for those aspiring journalists out there. I would bring a pillow and an alarm clock because literally my only job was at the top of the hour. So I'm like, I don't want to be up all night. So I would take little cat naps. Alarm would go off at 12:55, wake up, hit the button, lay back down, 1:55. It was terrible.
That's anyway. Sort of like George's sleeping under his desk.
Absolutely. It was not. If they ever walked in, they probably would have fired me on the spot. So I'm doing this job, and I realize this is not what I want to do, right? And I'm waiting tables at the Arizona Center. I'm like, this is terrible. And so Tim Liotta, I would go in, and I would record SportsCenter updates, right? Where, mm-hmm. you know, the little minute and a half, 2 minute, you know, last night, the D-backs, you know. And so I would take a tape, a cassette tape, and I would give it to Tim. And I'm not joking. I literally did that for 30 days straight. I would walk into his office, hey, will you take a listen and tell me what you think? Hey, would you take a listen and tell me what you think? He never told me what he thought, right? So about the 30th day, I'd walk in, hand him the tape, and he goes, get out of here. And I was like, dude, what? And he goes, you started updates Monday. And I'm like, oh. So I was doing updates during the Jim Rome show, and that was when Jim Rome was
really Jim
it, right? That was when he was, like, big time. And so I'm doing that. I'm having fun. But I'll tell you a real quick story about how it kind of blew up for me, right? This was probably maybe 6 months to a year in. And I'm doing the show, doing updates during Jim Rome. And one day he has Jeremy Roenick from the Coyotes on the show. I go to the game that night, getting sound. That was part of my job. So Roenick has like two goals and an assist. Coyotes win. So I go up to Jeremy Roenick thinking, I got to get some tape on this and send it back to Romy, right? So my microphone's on and I say, hey, Jeremy, Mark Asher, I produce the Jim Rome show here in Phoenix. And he goes, what's up, man? I go, hey, can you talk about Jungle Karma? Because Jim Rome used to talk about guys come on the show and then they have great games, right? So JR has this unbelievable soundbite, right? Talking about Romy's my man. I'll go on the Jim Rome show. I'll go on every day if I have a game like this, right? Cut, boom, call the guy, the producer, Travis Rogers, T-Rodge. I say, hey, do I got this great sound from Jeremy Roenick? Do you want it? He's like, absolutely. So I send the whole thing, including the part that I said, hey, Jeremy, I'm Mark Asher, I produced the Jim Rome show.
Oh.
I didn't mean to, but I was in a hurry. Yeah. So that's not true. I didn't produce the Jim Rome show. I just was a board op and an update guy. So I send it next day or that day, Jim Rome's doing a show, and he goes, dude, last night one of the locals, you know, he's doing the Jim Rome voice, and he goes, and he had this classic exchange with Jeremy Roenick, and it plays, hey, JR, I'm Mark Asher, I produced the Jim Rome show, and right away I'm like, oh, boy. So he plays a cut, and Jim Rome goes, attaboy, that is what it's all about. You know, Jeremy, it's all about the jungle. He goes, wait a minute. Actually, it's all about my boy, Mark Asher in Phoenix, lying to Jeremy Roenick, telling him he produces the Jim Rome show, right? And I'm sitting at this board going, I'm done. There's the career. Fun. I'll go work fast food. You know, it was over. I'm like, because he's making fun of me, but also like propping me up.
Yeah.
He's like, that a boy, Ash. He goes, you can use my name for whatever you want. Jobs, money, chicks. He goes, if you ain't lying, you ain't trying, right? And so he goes on this whole thing. I hear Tim Liotta's footsteps running down the hall. And I'm like, here it is. I'm gone. Like, grabbing my stuff, ready to leave. He's talking about you? I go, yeah. He goes, I want the sound. That day and for the next month, a promo played about me with Jim Rome, that whole exchange. And it took off from there. So I like kind of credit Jim Rome with making fun of me for kind of giving me a name in the valley. And then a few months later, Liotta left the afternoon show with Gambo. I think he went to the mornings. And so they were trying all these hosts out nationally and different guys locally to be Gambo's co-host. and I would fill in when they didn't have one, right? So I would do the show when they didn't have someone scheduled to try out. And at the end, Gambo goes, I want to work with Mark. Like, he's the best one we've had. And I got hired at 24 years old. I was one of the youngest talk show hosts in the country in a big market. The rest is history. We did that show for 13 years until July 21st, 2011.
I know. And I, one of the
July 20th, 2011.
One of the reasons why I saw that and I'm like, wow, this is an interesting guest, because you're always talking about, I mean, I'm always talking about the confidence level. When I teach at GCU and stuff, I'm trying to tell people that you got to roll with the punches.
Absolutely.
Like, you took a great thing. Can you imagine how big that thing would have been today with all the extra stuff that's available?
Oh, yeah, Twitter and all that. It just started when I was getting out.
And but, you know, lots of people, one bad thing happens and they're toast for 6 months, 2 years, their whole life.
Or ever, right, yeah.
Yeah. But how, so... The reason why, as soon as I saw your post, because you do it every year.
I do it every
year. I always read it because it's probably funny to you now, but it wasn't funny when it happened.
No.
So,
no.
But tell them how, what they did, and or because it's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
Give us a little synopsis of how that went.
All right, so real quick, it was July 20th, 2011.
Not that you remember it.
Well, you know, you remember those dates. And I got called in to a meeting. And everyone had a meeting. Every host had a one-on-one meeting with the program director. His name was Ryan Hatch. And Ryan's like, hey, after the show, meet me at the Swizz, right? The Swizzle Lounge on 16th and Bethany. Real crap hole. But anyway, and he's like, for a beer. Not thinking anything of it. We'd done it before, right? Mm-hmm. I walk in, and there's Ryan Hatch, but also Scott Sutherland, who was the general manager. And I was like, this isn't good. Like, what's he doing here, right? Mm-hmm. So we walk in. They have a Bud Light waiting for me. I had just signed a big endorsement deal with Budweiser for the state of Arizona. I was going to be the voice of, like, Bud Light, you know, promotional, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So I was really excited. It was a big deal. And they're like, Bud Light, right? And I go, yeah, I have to drink Bud Light in public. Otherwise, I'll get fired. And I kind of looked at them like, what are we doing here? And they said, today was your last show. And I'm like, what? And I was blown away. I didn't see it coming at all. And I kind of asked, like, you know, what did I do wrong? But and they just said, look, we're just restructuring. People forget, Gambo got sent from the afternoon show to middays. So he got, like, a little demotion as well.
Right.
They took Doug and Wolf from the mornings and put them in the afternoon. That lasted a year, and then they restructured everything. But they were like, you know, they were nice and – it wasn't like, you know, I didn't go out swinging or anything. I was just like, wow. And so I went home. I was supposed to go on a date with my wife. We were just dating at the time, and I canceled, obviously. And
I got fired. I got
so I called a couple of my buddies, and I said, hey, grab a bottle of vodka, and I'll meet you at the house, and something to put it in. And they're like, okay, what's up? And so we get there, and I tell them. And so we drank it all. At my house, and we were laughing, we were crying. I was scared. I was like, this is all I've ever done. I was 37 years old. This is the only thing I'd ever done my whole life was talk show. And so I'll never forget, I had pretty good buzz going, but just went upstairs to my room, went to sleep, woke up at 6 in the morning, like nothing happened. Like, no hangover, no. And it was like, I just had this weird clarity. I'm done. Like, I'm done with radio. I'm not doing it anymore. I don't know what's next, but that chapter in my life is over. It was so clear. It's weird. I tell that story just because it. And so, you know, then we'll get to what happened after that. But I never really look back. And so the reason I post every year on July 20th on Facebook, I was going to stop year 5, right? Like, I would post, today was the day. 1 year ago, I got, you know. And I was lucky because one of my best friends, his name's John Arnold, fraternity brother up at NAU, he was my financial advisor, right? And he called, a couple days after, and he's like, hey, I know what's next. And I was like, "What? Okay, what's next? He's like, we're going to open a wealth management firm together. And I literally hung up on him. And he calls me back, and he goes, you just hang up? I go, yep. He goes, why? I go, because you're talking stupid. Like, what? I don't know anything about that. That's why I pay you. And he goes, let's go golfing. And I'm a sucker for free golf, as you know, right? So I was like, all right, fine. And then he just started kind of, he's like, look, it's not what you know, it's who you know and how you carry yourself, and people trust you and respect you, and you have a great name, and I'll teach you what you need to know. It's not that big of a deal. And I'll, you know, so I looked at a couple other things. I actually looked at some like commercial insurance, you know, so like big, you know, big corporate insurance deals, which pays unbelievable, but
if you can put up with
the first like 5 years, and I just wasn't sure. Plus the guy was like, radio is over, and I didn't really, I wanted to dabble maybe, but not do it as a career. And so I knew I didn't want to go work for another radio station because I was at the top. I was at, you know, KTAR, best show.
And that's been around I'm 64.
Same with me. I used to listen to it with my dad. Yeah, Jude LaCava and all the different names that would do the show, Brad Sesmat. So anyway, I made the choice to join, my buddy, and we started. So then I had to take the test.
Which is always fun.
You can't just be a financial advisor. You have to work for it. So I'm reading this stuff, you know, series 7, 6. I'm reading it. It's Chinese hieroglyphics. I didn't know what it was. I don't know anything about puts and calls and options. Anyway, so I had to take 3 tests in like 4 months, right? So I'm just living at a library, studying, trying to figure it out. I passed all the tests, and then we started. And I told my buddy, I said, I'll give you 2 years. And if I am not good at this, I will go back to radio with my tail between my legs, right? And so in my first year, and this isn't to like toot my own horn, but I finished top 10 in the country for Equitable Advisors, which was our broker-dealer, of new, like, first-year guys. That's pretty good, right? I mean,
Was there calls about, hey, come work for us or anything right after that? Or is there a no-touch period for...
No, I think it's a right-to-work state, but I didn't have a non-compete. I did get a call to do a show with Mike Jarecki.
Oh, yeah.
Good buddy of mine.
Oh, I like that guy, yeah.
And honestly, when I threw out my number, they didn't call back. And I'm not talking my phone number, right?
Yeah.
My number. And they never called back. And so that was the thing. Like, I was making really good money. And that's why I got let go, was they were trimming the budget a little bit. And so I was just like, I don't want to go work for a second-rate station. I'd already been there at Clear Channel. I left for Greener Pastures and KTR, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm not going back. And then, I mean, I'm going to take more than half of a pay cut. I'm like, this is... And then again, you're just going to get fired again. And I was like, do I really want to try to, you know, go do 10 more years of radio, and then I'm 47 and trying to start over and get a whole new career? I didn't want to do it. I felt like 37, perfect opportunity. At the time, I only had my one son. He was only a couple years old, if that. Yeah, he's 3 or 4 years old. So I was able to kind of like reinvent myself. And so I did. And then we've just grown it ever since. And I mean, now we've got, you know, there's, five of us, actually six now. We just brought on a new partner. We have, you know, we've had offices in San Diego, Las Vegas, Bozeman, Montana, huge here in Scottsdale, almost a $1 billion firm. Like, pretty good for a bunch of knuckleheads from NAU, because we're all five partners all went to NAU.
Well, see, that's why you should be doing
again,
all your
the Harvard
stuff.
Of the West.
Yeah. So what do you think, what did you get from, I mean, because there's a lot of people out there that are they're having a hard time finding a job now. Now you got this collision of AI.
Right.
That might be taking some jobs. But a lot of times, my opinion is that it gets oversold. That everybody's, oh, we're going to get rid of everybody. And then all of a sudden, you can't answer your phone, and everybody drops you because they don't want to talk to a robot.
Right.
So what do you think, what drove you to get past that firing as fast as you did? Because it looks like you got up pretty quick.
I did. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to sound cheesy, but I feel like things happen for a reason, right? So it is what you do with it, right? No one handed me anything. Now, my friend called me with an idea, but it wasn't handed. There was no salary, by the way.
Right.
So it was eat what you kill, you know, that first year. So I'm out in my first year selling life insurance, annuities, like anything to get paid so I could live. I mean, I had a certain lifestyle. I was making really good money in radio. And so it was tough. I mean, you had to have, it was, It was like, let's go, or else you're going to be in trouble. You're going to lose houses. You're going to, you know, not have a girlfriend. You're not going to have, you know, be able to provide for your kid. And so it was just, I guess my mentality was just like, okay, it's go time. And so we did it. And I'm not going to lie, the first few years, I mean, I made good money my first year, but not anything close to what I was making in radio. So there was sacrifice. And then, you know, it's a slow build because how we do things is, you know, more fee-based, right? And so, you know, yeah, could I go sell a, you know, $500,000 annuity and get paid up front above a big amount? Sure. But that's not how we like to do it. We like to just work with our clients, charge them a nominal fee, and then, you know, as their account grows, so does our fee, right? We don't raise it, but it just, you know.
But you also got to have, you know, the enough investments to make.
So right, so that takes, you know, that's not my point.
That's
where
the work comes.
That takes a minute, right? Yeah. I mean, if you have $5 million under AUM, it's really not that much money.
Right.
You're getting, you know, maybe 1% to the grid. Everyone can do the math. It's not that much, right? So, you know, but now when you get, you know, those numbers get into six and seven figures, it's a little easier to live, right? And so, yeah, it was a grind. It was a grind. And, but, you know, that's what I tell people in my post every year was, you know, hey, when you think it's darkest, it's not. There is, this sounds cheesy, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You got to find it and then you got to work for it. No one's going to hand you anything. But this, when you think it's, you're at the bottom, you might be, but that doesn't mean it's over. And so that's kind of the premise. I was doing it, like I said, for 5 years and I posted once. I think this will be the last time I mention getting let go in radio. And I got all these direct messages on Facebook, do not stop. And one guy told me he literally was thinking about taking his own life.
Oh,
and
wow.
It hit me hard. And he goes, and I read your post, and I said, nope. And he told me he was doing great and this and that and the other. And I mean, that hit, right? I was like, ooh, like, this is just a post. Be like, ah, screw you, KTAR, look at me, I'm doing great. I mean, it wasn't, but, you know, kind of. And instead, I realized, oh, this is actually hitting home with people, right? So now, 15 years later, 16 years later, whatever it is, 15, yeah, I still do it. And people still, like, I look forward to this every year. And it's not a brag. It is literally a testament to when you think you're at your darkest, you're not. And you can turn it around.
How long did it take you to post that after the stuff went through? Did you wait a year?
It was the first year. Yeah.
Okay, so you did it pretty close.
Well, because I said in the first year, for those of you wondering, it was more of like, hey, here's an update on your boy Ash, right? Here's what I'm doing. Also at the time was maybe to try to get some business.
Right.
Because I was still hunting. And so, yeah, that was the first year and then the second and the third. And it's just, it's in my calendar. Every July 20th, post on Facebook and it pops up and I go, yeah.
Now, did
now I can have ChatGPT write it though. So,
oh, yeah, they won't. Yeah, they'll correct it and make it sound really
exactly
like a robot.
Wow, you sound so eloquent, Ash. How
that's
do you do
not
that?
It because when I use it, people will go, hey, I think I know how you use ChatGPT to write that because it doesn't sound like you,
right?
Stop doing it.
I agree.
Yeah.
You have to put it in your own words.
Did because I'm a big fan of the networking, and you try to talk to kids about this and job seekers and things. Is how did you get a hold of that part? Was that from the radio station meeting people through that? Or because you have to build up, you actually had a big support system when this shit happened to you.
Right.
Which is a lot different than other people.
Sure. And I was, there was some timely things that happened that helped me eat. You know, I mean, like there's a couple big things that
right.
were already teed up. And so that helped. But then, yeah, and I did some groups and stuff like that. As a financial advisor, some of those like BNI and stuff like that, I'm not talking bad about them, but it just wasn't for me. I felt like I was given all the referrals because I know everyone in town, mm-hmm. right? But they weren't being reciprocated. So I was like, this is a waste of my time. I'm just making everyone around me fat and happy and no one's doing anything in reverse. It is, you know, I think a lot of people thought I was going to have all these athletes, Larry Fitzgerald, Hall of Famer, by the way, props
yeah.
Larry, as my client. I was good friends with Larry. I didn't call Larry Fitzgerald and be like, hey, so I'm not in radio, but I'm no way. Shane Doan, Jeremy Roenick, who I'm, you know, not, you know, friends with after that day, you know, 20 some odd years ago. I don't think I have maybe one or two athlete clients and they wouldn't be guys who anyone knows. Like they're, it's not about that. Now, What I did take was some of my business relationships, right? Whether it was through commercials or different things than that. And I still work with those today. Then I have a great friend group, right? And so when I went to NAU, I joke, like, we were a bunch of dummies, right? We were a Delta Chi fraternity. We were a bunch of idiots, right? Just partying, doing, I don't know what, but there was like a 5-6 year window of Delta Chi's at NAU, maybe even longer than that, that these dudes are all like ballers now. I mean, everyone in my group, I mean, just huge companies around the country, around the state, like not a lot of deadbeats came out of our, right? And so now, you know, guys that own nightclubs right here, a fraternity brother of mine, like guys, you know, lawyers, plastic surgeons, all kinds of different companies, aerospace, like amazing stories, all of them in their own right. And you know, there's some reciprocation there, right? We're all buddies. We're all, hey, I want you to take care of this, and I'll, okay, I'll send you this. And so your inner circle is going to help you big time. And sometimes you have to tap into it, right, and see what's out there. And sometimes it takes time. Like, that was the hard part for me was I think everyone was waiting for me to just, you know how people get fired and then they call you, hey, Mike, I'm doing mortgages. And then a year later, like.
Or
hey,
you're a plumber.
I'm a, yeah, hey, Mike, I got this, I got this. And you realize this person has no idea what they're doing. They're just trying to survive, which you can appreciate. Doesn't make you want to do business with them, right? And I think a lot of people in my first 2 years were like, he's going to end up back in radio. This is just biding his time in the financial advising. And I had to try to tell them, like, I'm not going back to radio. You have my word. Like, now I did go back in a part-time
role,
but it when
was
I did
related
money radio.
To the business.
Yeah, it was just it was an hour show. I wasn't doing afternoon drive. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't even a job really. And I did, you know, I did a year here with Pratt's group. And but that was just for fun, make a little side money. I was just trying to make it, right? I was just trying to survive and live until the money started coming in. So yeah, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, call, use those people, tap into your inner circle, your true friends, and see what happens. No one wants to see any of their buddies fail, right? So to a certain extent, and now, as we're all old now, you know, as you can see by the gray hair, I mean, I got guys ready to sell out and, you know, sell their companies and retire. It's a whole new world we're in now, right? Now I've got not guys that, oh man, you were making a lot of money back then. No, now you're sitting on a company that's worth $50 million. What are we going to do, right? And so it's fun, right? And we get to participate together. So that's been one of the more rewarding things, just seeing my friends and their growth and their successes. And then, you know, I've made a lot of friends in this business with new clients I had no idea I'd ever be friends with. Like, mm-hmm. I'm really friendly with all my clients. Like, are there a few that are just transactional or, you know, I talk to them once a year? Sure. But a lot of them, like, we're friends, you know. I know everything about the family. I know everything about the kids, and it's really cool. I joke with people all the time, like my elevator pitch, you know, if you will. I used to help you get home, right, from your drive, entertainment, right? You were driving home 2 to 6. You wanted to hear about the Cardinals trade. You were listening to me. So I helped you get home. I still help you get home to retirement.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of getting home, right? And so that's kind of my cheesy elevator pitch, if you will.
Does – Now, a lot of things I talk about with people that are going to school or whatever, but I noticed that, you know, lots of people are still taking online courses and stuff, but you don't get the same bang for your buck. Like, you can't develop a lot of stuff with other people that you don't see, and you're just seeing them on a screen. Because I know a lot of people do online school today, but it's not as valuable.
No, there and you know, people have asked me, there's a thing called robo-advisor, right? And it's kind of the AI world. Like
the Benjamin AI.
This guy can put my portfolio together. And I'm like, yeah, sure, probably can. But when you have some real questions and you really just want to talk to a person through retirement, am I going to run out of money? What if we do this? Change. There's still something to that personal element of at least my business. And I think a lot of businesses out there, I don't think we're ready to turn over to robots and AI. Is it helping? Is it making things easier? Absolutely. Do I use it? Absolutely. Like, I use ChatGPT all the time for different things. And it's now incorporated into my world. You know, we recently switched broker-dealers and went to Raymond James. And Raymond James is a lot more accepting of the real world and technology as opposed to my old group. And we can use Copilot and ChatGPT. Now there's different versions, but
they probably have a white label one in there.
Yeah, but it's there. But it's great. So then when you want to do all your reviews, we have thousands of clients, right? Like, it's a lot easier to put this together, put all the info in, and then, yeah, ChatGPT makes it sound a little cleaner, a little better, and you're also not typing it over and over and over. Is it saving me time? Sure. Is the robot replacing me? No. It's helping me, right? So I agree, the personal interactions, one-on-one, you really get to know a person, right? And that's where trust is built, in my opinion, right? And the want or the desire to do business, whatever that business is built on a golf round, a beer, a Cardinal game, whatever.
What's the hiring like right now for the investment business? I mean, I used to be in that, but what does that look like as for like a career, or what are the pluses and minuses that you see?
Great question. Timely, too, there, Mike. Yeah. As I told you, unfortunately, I just had my assistant of 7 years, had to step away. So I'm in the middle of this. Do you know anyone that can help? I'm just kidding.
We can always put it out.
So I'll tell you in a couple months. No, we don't hire a ton. We have a small staff, 3 or 4 people. Guys have their own individual assistants, right? In our business, I think what I've seen, the competitive nature is kicking up a notch. If you've got some skill and you're good at what you do, you are now in demand. Because unfortunately, a lot of times, and I'm going through this right now, I don't want to hire someone to be my assistant that I have to take a year and a half to train.
Yeah,
I need someone that knows the difference between a Roth IRA and a regular IRA. I know, you know what I mean? A journal and a transfer. I need you to already know the jargon, if you will. And so that's the hard part for us, because a lot of them, they're not out there, right? They might be, if they're really good, they're being compensated well at wherever they're at, Wells Fargo, Merrill Lynch, whatever, you know, these assistants or some of the private wealth companies out there. I think the knowledge, what a lot of assistants now are trying to do is actually get licensed so you can participate a little bit, right? And that's a way where the advisor will be like, cool, like this is part of your bonus structure. Here we go. And now, you know, it's tough. I somehow got, when we went to Raymond James, we kind of had to change the structure of our company to where we're now like our own company. Where our old broker-dealer used to handle health benefits, 401k. It was all built in. Well, now we're just our own entity, right? We're
over in, their umbrella.
Right, over there. Yeah, that's, you know, that's, we get paid through them. We have some compliance, but other than that, everything else is on us. So somehow I got put in charge of HR.
That's always fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And but yeah, you know, you start thinking about, okay, you know, all these different things that go into being a real company. Not that we weren't a real company before, but now, you know, we match the 401k. We match the health benefits, you know, trying to find health benefits is a whole nother topic and not fun to deal with. So I think from the hiring standpoint, again, I'll know a little better. It's been a minute since I've had to go through it, right? And that's, I think that was good for us. I mean, you know, 7 years is a nice run with one company with our assistant. And she left, like, not, there was no anger or anything. It was just she had some stuff that she had to take care of. So we're out there looking and trying to figure it out. And
so she was with you. How long was she with you?
Like, yeah, about 7 years.
Which is now...
That seems
turns
like an
into
eternity,
2 years.
Right?
Yeah, 7 years is like, you know, 10 years, 12
right, yeah,
years.
Exactly.
So now you run into people all the time. Because I talk to hundreds of job seekers every week, and I'm amazed at the same thing. They're like, it's always something that's either about, I'm not getting enough growth, but I just started 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. I don't feel respected because I'm not getting paid as much as with a guy across the hall that has 5 extra certs than me.
Right.
Or it's, you know, these hours are just too much.
Right.
And you're fighting a battle to where you're trying to get, you know, it's the same thing with the school. You're giving participation trophies out when you're a freshman. And how are you going to be, you know, a hard guy or a hard gal when the stuff gets tough? I mean, like, if you get fired, nobody's going to come over and, like, you know, put their arm around
give you
and give you, oh, here's a trophy. Yeah. Oh, and here's a bottle of vodka because
right.
You're going to need it later.
Yeah, you're going to want this.
So there, I'm like, it's just so screwed up that I can't figure out, as many times as people ask me, they want me to tell them how you fix it. And I'm like, if I know how to fix it, I would be doing it. my thing is I got to wade through all this crap on a daily basis.
I had this, we before I hired my last assistant that was there 7 years, we had actually hired someone else, and she worked for us for 12 days and quit. Like, she's like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was. I'm like, we were pretty clear what this was, right? And so I did that, and then we had to go back, and that's where I found my assistant the second time, which was great. And it's tough, too, because, you know, would I love to hire a young, hungry person?
Go-getter.
Go-getter? Yeah. Sure, I would. However, I don't want to be a stepping stone job either, right? You know, we're a family, right? I've known my business partners for years, some of them 30 years, right? I went to college with two of my guys. They were both in my fraternity, right? So, like, you know, we're a family. And so I don't want, like, a turnstile. Then you could flip it and say, well, let's go hire someone, you know, tail end of their career. Well, okay, then they might retire on you, right? So it's, you got to try to find that sweet spot. And we're open to all, but, yeah, it's I respect what you have to do.
What do you think the future is for that business? I mean, is that something that somebody in college that's interested in that or has some acumen in it? I don't think it's as much about the investments as it is about the people skills.
100%.
Because you can learn the investment stuff. The people skills, sometimes you can't learn at all.
I don't even do the investments in my role. Like, so we all have different roles, our partners, and my partner, Ben Miles, is kind of our... I call him my beautiful mind.
The brainiac?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I tell him he's the smartest person in the room, any room I walk into with him, right? And the guy's a genius with this, and this is what he loves to do. He doesn't love to go find clients and network. That's not his jam, right? But his jam is, I'm really smart at this. And so all my personal, like individual clients, I mean, he's basically managing, and they know that. He's in on the meetings. He's in on the reviews. About five or six years ago, took on the role. We were actually trying to hire someone to do this, and we couldn't really find the right person. And so
my
partners were like, why don't you just do it? You're already doing it. So anyway, I built out our 401k department. So I manage 35 or so 401ks, meaning company 401ks, mm-hmm. right? The whole retirement benefits group. And so it's been... really good for me to become an expert in that. I had to go do more classes and get more letters at the end of my name and all that, which I didn't love. But it's been really good because now I have an expertise in the business, right? And where before, no one was really coming to me to do joint work, all my young guys that work for me. No one was coming, hey, Ash, I need you to... There was no reason, right? Unless they just were like a diehard fan from back in the day. I'd drop in and close the deal, but that happened very infrequently. And so the 401k role and becoming an expert in that has been really, really nice. And so we all kind of have our own thing as we, you know, build out this company. Everyone's got their own roles and what they're good at. And at the end of the day, they're all an individual book of business, right? You know, so if I decide to leave or retire, all these clients are mine. What do I do with them? Sell them, you know, all that good stuff. So, yeah, I think that the industry future is still bright. I think what we're seeing, there's a momentum shift going on, and this was one of the reasons why we left our last broker dealer and went to a Raymond James. There's a movement to, you know, Raymond James, other big, you know, broker dealers, LPL, big, heavy into recruiting right now. They're bringing in all these different groups from these other broker dealers that aren't really giving you what you need, right? Or just go to a straight RIA, right? Registered Investment Advisor, where you have your own compliance, you take 100% of the fees, right? And then you know, this is a different way to do business. And that could be something we look at down the road as well. But the movement is these kind of like individual, I don't want to call them producer groups, but individual companies, you hear some on the radio, right? This is what it's all about, these little groups that are building out. I think a lot of times the day of walking into your Chase and sitting down with the financial advisor over there might be easy for some, but a lot of my age group and even younger, the emerging affluent, they're not doing that. Older people love just one stop, right? One stop. I go here, I got my checking, that's my, you know, he's got my IRA and boom, and it's done. I think the younger group doing things a little differently. So I still think there's huge potential, but there's definitely been a downsizing in the amount of advisors around the country.
Kind of like the, probably like the realtor business.
But sure.
The realtor business is easier to get into, but you know, like when people go, well, I'm not doing anything now, I'm just going to get my, I'm going to get my real estate license. And I'm like, dude, you have no clue on what you're doing. And even that's a market. I mean, in both markets, realtor and brokerage, you're having, you know, there's a pressure on fees because more, you're just, I think you're going to get bigger practices because you're, the smaller ones are going to have a hard time making it.
I have very good friends in that business. George Lawton's one of the best realtors in town. He's built up an unbelievable team, the Lawton mm-hmm. Group, right? Jason Mitchell, who's a huge, I mean, he's one of the biggest realtors in the country, local guy, good buddy of mine. He just sold, like, for, a, I don't know what the amount was, but I'm pretty sure it was good. Yeah. And so, but that's the thing. They're building up these groups. The one-off realtor who's with Century 21 or whatever, you know,
yeah,
whatever,
the
yellow
red,
sign.
Yeah. The red coat.
Yeah, or,
the,
yeah, or even like Coldwell Banker.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those can be successful, those one-off people. But if you're not producing or part of a bigger group, my home group, they're clients of mine, they just sold not too long ago, right? And so that's kind of the way of the world in that game. And so you're right. If you're not in this team and group and doing things, the one-off person, you can't be a one-off financial advisor. It's very, very difficult. You got to have a team around you, in my opinion, or be with a wirehouse or something like that.
So, yeah, that I was thinking that stuff was especially shrinking. And by the way, you can't do this cold call stuff as much as you did. I remember we did a deal in Sedona, and my partner and I called every frickin' property in Sedona through their little phone book. Mm-hmm. And nobody does that anymore.
No.
But by the way, nobody would answer.
Well, you remember back in the day, what was that movie, Boiler Room or whatever?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They were just, you know, yeah. You sit in this room, don't come out until you make 200 phone calls. I, knock on wood, I never made one cold call in my life. Now, have I gotten an introduction here or there? Yes. But I never lived that world of financial advising. Now, there are people that have done that and still do it to this day. They got to, you know, it's not really cold calling, but it's finding the network or getting, you know, generating leads. You can buy leads now in our business, which I'm not a big fan of, but you could pay X amount and you get so many calls and then.
Oh, I know. You know. That's kind of like the ones from Glengarry, Glenn Ross, the good leads.
Yeah, good leads.
Yeah. Did, and now let's.
Coffee's for closers, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. We were talking, and the second place is steak knives. That's my favorite. Now let's back up to something we were talking about before we started. Is your son.
Yes.
So I always like to, when I get to talk to younger people, I always really take advantage of it. And you mentioned it when you were here, but it was like two summers ago, we were up in Munts Park and your son was there. And I've met him like once when he was younger, but I had like a 30-minute conversation with him.
Oh yeah, you got sucked in.
Yeah. And, but no, I always like to, because my son's very like that too. He can talk to anybody. And it's not just about stupid stuff.
Mm.
It was, you know, oh, what do you do? And talking about this and that. And, you know, what did you learn from your dad? Or what all that. It was a very, really good discussion. Is that learned or is that more innate? What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely think, so I have three sons, but my oldest, who you're talking about, is Jackson. He's about to go to college. He is me. Like, he wants to be in broadcasting. If you had him here and close your eyes, the voice is almost identical. It's really weird. He'll answer the phone, you know, or grab my phone, and, you know, grandma thinks it's me, and he's like, it's Jackson. And she's like, geez, like, what are you doing, you know? So I think some of it's innate, right? It's what you got from me and my genes. And but I've also shown him the way, too. Like, but what I never showed him, except for how I handle myself with people, is, you know, I feel like I can walk into a room and I'm good, right? I can take it over if I need to. I can mix in just fine. Like, that's just part of my communication skill, right? I'm never awkward in a room. I'm never like, I don't want to be here. He's the same, and he's been that way since he was five. It's crazy. And when he was five, six, seven, he'd rather talk to you for a half hour than another seven-year-old for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
like, he didn't want to talk to kids. He wanted to talk to adults. He always wanted to be in the adult conversation. He wanted to be at the adult table or the adult bar, right? He always wanted to be where the action was. He didn't want to go be, you know, playing with Hot Wheels. And it's just grown. And so, I mean, on his baseball team, he played at Liberty High School, and his nickname was Unc, and like Uncle, right? And because he doesn't listen to today's music, he listens to Metallica, Pantera. I mean, this is his old school music. He's an old soul. He's just more mature than everyone else, right? So he's called Unc. I'm telling you, the whole school called him Unc. Teachers, principals, girls, like it, no one. One of the parents came up to me and she goes, "I just found out yesterday your son's name is Jackson." And I said, "Did you think I named my son Unc?" Like, and she goes, "No, I just didn't know
like
what his name was."
Like you couldn't.
She was a new parent on the team. And I was dying laughing. And so, yeah, he's just got this. He's a really good kid. Always has been. And so he's going to college. We leave on Sunday to take him. He's going out to Chicago, Concordia University, Chicago. He's going to keep playing baseball and he's going to try to get a degree in broadcast journalism. And I was telling you, and then we had to start this, but all the games at Concordia are broadcast on YouTube by the students. Like,
well,
they don't
great.
Have a Al McCoy, Tim Healy. They don't have the voice.
But they're
the
doing
Cougars.
It themselves.
They're doing it
now
themselves.
Now I got something on tape to show people.
Which is great. I told him, I said, that's what you need. You know, that's what helped me get a talk show in Phoenix, a big market, top 20 market, mm-hmm. at age 24, was I'd been doing it for 3 years at a real station, you know, in
people
college.
People don't count that as work, though. You know, it's like when a lot of times I have, and I've had students on here and they're asking, you know, should I put, you know, my working at Walmart or at a restaurant on my resume? And I'm like, yeah.
Everything.
Because that's customer service.
Right.
That's showing up on time. Did you have an internship? I keep pushing people to get more internships. Go to places. Don't go through the same old boring student stuff that they have. They never produce.
Right.
You got to get people on your own. And if you do, you'll end up getting somebody that teaches you something that's more than just, oh, hey, I got to come here every day.
Or you make a connection with someone, and they're like, when you're done, you're my guy or you're my girl. I'm hiring you. Yeah. You know what I mean? That happens all the time. Because if they get to see the person, the work ethic, the communication, the leadership, whatever qualities they possess or show during that time, that's your in. Instead of now you're just in an interview situation, right? And so that's what I'm hoping for Jackson. Like, being in a big city, I mean, they're outside the city of Chicago, but 20 minutes, you know, who knows? Well, you know, go work for the White Sox, go work for the Bears, go work for, you know, get an internship with the Bulls. I don't know. He wants to be in sports one way or another. So you're in a major city. If they offer, go do it. Because,
well, plus you're not here, which is, that forces you to do a lot of different things that you're not used to. You don't know as many people.
Right.
You kind of got to, oh, by the way, now I got to manage my own time. Nobody's going to go, hey, get out of bed, go
right.
to school.
He's good like that. Yeah. But yeah, I'm worried about him cleaning his room.
That's a problem.
His roommate might kill him in the first 2 weeks of school. No, I'm just kidding.
What do you think, talking about, we always like to bring up the AI thing here. What do you think about the way AI is going? Do you think it's too fast, too slow? I mean, just from a business guy, I mean, from looking at it from the outside, I know we use it and stuff, but what do you think
I'm going to answer that question two ways. Let's go from a business standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think it's going at an okay pace, to be quite honest. I think it's helping people. People are using it the right way. Trial and error, right? I'm one of those. I'm incorporating into my business a little bit more now, where before I just like, hey, ChatGPT, who won the 1974 Super Bowl, right? Or you know what I mean? Like, because I just wanted to.
Which you could do now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Which is just a quicker answer than Googling it, but same thing. So I think from a business standpoint, it's going okay, like at a decent pace. I think from a entertainment, social media, what we see out there, it's going way too fast. And because now we're getting to the point where I love to sit at night and scroll and zone out for a half hour and see what's happening. I don't know what's real and what's fake anymore. And I feel like it's going to come to a point where someone gets caught doing something and we'll never know if it was AI or real. And then you're going to have people like having to defend themselves, celebrities, athletes, politicians, whatever. That never happened. Well, it says right here it happened. You know what I mean? And I don't want to get to the point where I don't know what I'm looking at anymore. Does that make sense? Like, I can still see, you can tell when something's AI, right?
Right.
You know, crocodile jumps out of the water and eats a bird in the midair, and that's AI, right? Or you can tell even some of the, you know, AI people. You can just tell it's AI. But it's only going to get better. And that's what scares me is, like, we're – I mean, we were in Austin, Texas, and for a really good friend of ours, 50th birthday. So the boys were out one day. We were, like, you know, at some bar hanging out. And the girls went shopping. So we were separate, right? And so we took a picture of us, and we AI'd Matthew McConaughey in the picture because, you know, he's a big Austin guy. And I'm telling you, Mike, it looked as real as you could possibly – it looked creepy how real it looked, right? And then we said to the girls, too bad you guys missed out on this one.
Oh,
and
man,
they're losing their mind. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know. And then finally one of them was like, that's AI. I'm like, eh, is it? You know. But it was so creepy how realistic it looked. Like, it looked like he was sitting there having beers with us. And so – and we're only scratching the surface, in my opinion. So I think that part is going a little fast. I think the business side is, it's probably going at the right speed.
What would be your advice to somebody now that was in the position where they got marched to a restaurant today and told them,
is hey, the Swiss need, a restaurant?
You need to get the, or a
know,
fine
I'm
dining
joking,
establishment,
joking.
As I like to use. What would be your advice to that someone to reset, to be able to pull? Because a lot of times that's one of some of the worst things that ever happened to you.
I think the biggest thing is my advice is, one, don't get too down, right? Don't woe is me. I woe is me'd for one night. Literally, woe is me. What did I do wrong? And then, like I said, I woke up, had this vision, clarity. And I was like, okay, whatever. We're good. So don't get too down. I'm not saying you have to get over it in a day. But and take your time. Like, I know maybe you need to pay bills or whatever. I get that. You can do something to make that happen if you're trying to figure out a career, right? And use what you have. You know, if you have to dip into something, this for cash, whatever, get yourself through it. Because again, the brighter side is there. You just got to sometimes find it, right? So I think take your time, take it all in. Have a moment of, you know, have your pity party if you need it, but make it a short party and then get grinding. It's go time, right? You got to go figure it out. And whatever that is, call on people, call on friends. Don't be shy. People want to help people, right? If you're a good person, if you're a piece of garbage,
crap.
I don't know what to tell you, but if you're a good person, you've treated people the right way and you just got an unfortunate set of circumstances thrown your way, you're going to be fine. You just got to know that you're going to be fine. I'd still Shawshank, crawl through a mile of crap to get to the other side. It's very similar when you get upended from what you thought was your forever job or your forever career or, you know, stuff like that.
Well, this has been great, Mark. I know.
Are we out of time?
Yeah, we're almost an hour.
We haven't even talked about anything.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been great having you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, always a pleasure, dude. When you called me, I was like, sweet. But the funny thing is, I thought we were just doing a podcast, so I had to rent this suit.
No, I know. So, me too. I got my shorts on.
Take it back. No, you don't. You have a tuxedo on under there.
So I was always like to say, Mark would probably agree with this, if you have a friend that's having a tough day like that, why don't you reach out to him? Go visit him. Or call somebody you haven't talked to in a while. You'd be surprised at how big of a difference that makes. And this is Mike Hayes with The Hiring Confessional.